big foot!
The leg, not the leg!
He's dragging Flair to tee! He drops the leg!
No, please! Please! I'll be good, I'll never do that!
One!
Again. Please, God!
Two!
Oh, my God!
The winner!
Oh, no!
And still, heavyweight champion of the world!
Think Hulkamania's not for real, then you're mistaken. You're wrong. He lived in Detroit again. He's the world champion.
Hello, my name is Bob Mann and welcome to the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. We're going back in the time machine to October of 1994. I'm being joined by Del Muir. Del, good evening.
Hi, Bob.
Del, kick us off with the news.
Yeah, biggest story of the month. Bob needs to be Ric Flair. He's at least in storyline retired from professional wrestling this month. Career match at the recent Halloween Havoc pay-per-view with Hulk Hogan. Hogan ran out the victor after a steel cage match. The match itself saw interference for a number of people, including Flair's valet, Sherry, as well as Sting. And after the match, Flair slipped off quietly into the background as Hogan remained in the ring to celebrate and at a post-match angle afterwards as well. Flair's retirement's been briefly mentioned in TV the following week, but no more.
The reason, perhaps, for the lack of follow-up is likely due to the fact that WCW are already planning Flair's return to the ring. His match with Hogan was in doubt before it even started in the week leading up to the pay-per-view, as contract negotiations took over. Flair and WCW settled on a deal believed to be worth $425,000 per year through until March 1997. Flair is currently the head booker with the company and is being lined up to return to the ring as early as March next year for a WCW pay-per-view, which could be held in his hometown of Charlotte, North Carolina.
And more from the pay-per-view itself, the closing angle at the Havoc was not a Flair walking into the sunset, but Hulk Hogan being beaten down by a new faction in WCW calling themselves the Three Faces of Fear. Now, this faction is going to be led by the Butcher, might be better known as Brutus the Barber Beefcake from WWF, who was actually unveiled by Hogan at the end of the match being the masked man who's been haunting Hogan for the last couple of months. The Butcher was also flanked by Avalanche, who may again be known the better to WWF fans as John Tenta, who played Earthquake, and Kevin Sullivan also completed the trio of protagonists who has been feuding with TV with his brother Dave Sullivan in recent weeks and faced him at the pay-per-view.
Halloween Havoc received largely mixed reactions. The main event cage match was the headline of a largely otherwise uneventful show, which included Muhammad Ali being in the front row or representing his foundation. Pretty Wonderful defeated Stars and Stripes to regain the WCW tag titles. Johnny B. Badd and Honky Tonk Man fought to the time limit draw for the TV title. And Jim Duggan retained his title via DQ over Steve Austin thanks to WCW's slapdash enforcement of the over-the-top rope rule. There are also wins on the show for Dave Sullivan, Dustin Rhodes, Vader and the Nasty Boys.
And moving away from the ring, those that have been concerned recently about Hulk Hogan's growing influence in WCW pretty much seem to have every right to be, as booking decisions are seemingly being changed at Hogan's word. Vader, who became the number one contender for Hogan's title last month, won't be facing Hogan for the title next. It'll likely fall to Avalanche. It's been said that Vader had already taped promos for an upcoming feud with Hogan at a recent TV event, but then, to quote Dave Meltzer, certain people, i.e. Hogan, went to the office and asked those interviews not to be aired. Vader versus Hogan was the main event booked for Starrcade by Flair, but as I say, Hogan had overruled that. Also, Dave Meltzer says that Steve Austin was promised his title back, the title of the United States against Jim Duggan at Halloween Havoc, but again, Hogan had went to the booking committee and overruled it.
In Vince McMahon's first public interview since the steroid trial, he said he wanted Hulk Hogan to become the a Babe Ruth type thing in the WWF, where he would wrestle occasionally for the company. He said, quote, "It is a wonderful world we live in. It's a free country and we have choice. Unfortunately, he, Hogan, chose to go to Ted Turner. I'm surprised that Hulk Hogan elected to join Ted Turner, sort of a minor league operation." He would also call WCW a, quote, "minor annoyance."
And again, on WCW, they're actually going to air a pay-per-view event next month in conjunction with AAA, the promotion from Mexico focusing on Lucha Libre. It's going to be called When Worlds Collide. The event itself will feature a midgets tag team match, a main event of Perry Aguayo against Conan El Barbaro, and a six-man tag including Tito Santana, Too Cold Scorpio, and Chris Benoit as the Pegasus Kid. And we will have a review of the full show on next month's podcast.
While nothing is concrete on this story, both the Pro Wrestling Torch and the Wrestling Observer are reporting that Bret Hart will be dropping the WWF title soon, perhaps as early as next month at the Survivor Series pay-per-view. Bret will face Bob Backlund in the co-main event of the show, which will also be headlined by a Royal Rumble rematch between The Undertaker and Yokozuna in a casket match with Chuck Norris as the special guest enforcer.
You know, on the eve of the greatest sporting event of all time, it occurs to me, Gene Okerlund, that I don't need to explain to you or anybody out there just exactly what it means to be Ric Flair or what it means to be Hulk Hogan, because only two men in the history of this sport know what it means to be one or the other. That's Hogan, and that's me. Forget about the masked men. God love the Queen, and I do too. But forget about the Queen. Because tomorrow night, Hogan, you can read it in the USA. You can hear about it on TNT. They'll talk about it around the world. It's Hogan versus Flair. It's career versus career.
Whoa, what about Mr. T? You can't duck that subject any longer.
I don't have to duck it. You worry about Mr. T. I know what Mr. T is all about, and I know where he'll be tomorrow night. What I want Hogan to think about is through all this, since the day, don't give me any time cues, pal, since the day he walked into WCW, there was never room for either of us. Never room for Hogan and Flair. Only room for one. Tomorrow night, Hogan, I'm saying I'm the better man. I'm saying I'm the better athlete. I'm saying I'm a lot smarter. I wouldn't put my career on the line if I didn't know what I was doing. Why would the greatest of all time walk away at the height of his career? He wouldn't. Go to bed tonight. Look at your beautiful wife, those two beautiful kids, and remember that tomorrow night is forever. Not just another night. It's forever. You were 5 times World Wrestling Federation champion. That means nothing. Tomorrow night, you've got Flair. Head up. Career versus career in the steel cage. And look into my eyes, big man. Look into my eyes. They say I'm the dirtiest player in the game. They say Ric Flair can come back better than any athlete alive. Tomorrow night, I'm going to show you and the entire wrestling world why I've deserved to be number one. Since it all began. Tomorrow night, big boy.
We are back and we are moving on to WCW. We are not starting with the Halloween Havoc review because, as I've worked out in the month between this month's show and last is that I should probably do the TV review before the pay-per-view so I don't have to keep going back and explaining bits. So, we'll start with October the 1st, WCW Saturday night. Dave Sullivan confronts Ric Flair in a promo. Says he could have beaten Flair the week before. Sherry just goes nuts while around them. Flair says to Sullivan he will give in till 5 or he will break his leg. Flair turns around at 5 and Hogan has walked out to flank Sullivan. Hogan says that Flair can pick anyone he likes as a tag team partner to face him and Sullivan if Flair agrees to retire if he loses, to put his career on the line, rather, if he loses at Halloween Havoc. Hogan refers to the shoes he gave Sullivan, the ones he slammed on Andre the Giant with, as the quote-unquote magic slippers. October the 2nd, main event, the show ends with a shot across the street of Ric Flair and Mr. T, who will be the special guest referee in the Halloween Havoc main event, leaving a restaurant together. The story that they're building up across the month is maybe that Mr. T is in Flair's ear and may have an influence on the main event. October 8th, Mean Gene Okerlund interviews Hulk Hogan's parents. Parents call him Terry, as well, why wouldn't they? His dad said his son is not a novice in steel cage matches and that Ric Flair is a tremendous athlete. Hogan turns up and says that people still ask him if he's the greatest of all time. He calls it the ultimate challenge. Either Ric Flair has to go or I have to go. In the main event, US champion Hacksaw Jim Duggan and TV champion Johnny B. Badd face Lord Steven Regal and Stunning Steve Austin. Badd and Duggan won the match when Badd hit a float over sunset flip from the top rope to pin Regal. Again, they were teasing the story of Mr. T, Bobby Heenan asking whose side is he on. October the 9th, main event, Hulk Hogan and Dave Sullivan facing Ric Flair and a partner of Flair's choice. Before the match, Hogan presented Sullivan with a Hulk Rules robe. Kevin Sullivan comes out and berates Dave. He continues to do so, and Dave says Hogan has asked him to give him this, and then Dave slaps him, and Kevin cowers away. The main event of main event, Hulk Hogan and Dave Sullivan versus Ric Flair and a Flair's mystery partner, which turns out to be the masked man, who for the sake of notes is played by Bunkhouse Buck, although he's not the man, masked man, as we covered in the news. Sherry starts the match by taking some big bumps. Hogan locks in a figure four during the match. Hogan tries to rip the mask off the masked man, but out comes a second masked man who interferes with a DQ. After the match, Flair and Sherry beat down on Hogan's knee, and Kevin Sullivan comes out and attacks his brother Dave. Eric Bischoff on commentary says, quote, "We need the National Guard out here." Brother Brutai, or the Butcher, they interchange those names, it's Brutus Beefcake anyway. Brutai and Jimmy Hart come out and run off the heels, and Hogan is left clutching his knee. October the 15th, main event with a very good TV main event between Vader and Sting, ended by DQ when Harley Race interfered. After the match, Guardian Angel came out and handcuffed Race to the turnbuckle. Angel went to hit Race with a chair, but Doug Dillinger came out and stopped him. The story with this and Angel's promo earlier is a harder edge to the Guardian Angel character. He mentioned, quote, bringing back the handcuffs and the nightstick. Also on this show was a Ric Flair video package, which showed Flair, just basically about a 6 or 7 minute highlight video showing kind of Flair's many highlights, predominantly his heel run. Obviously they don't want to show much of face Flair, but most of his heel stuff of the last few years. And it was meant to be the counterance to the Hogan, interview with his parents the week before. Dale, before we go into Halloween Havoc, what do you think of the Hogan and Flair dueling packages?
I think kind of similar to Hogan coming in, Bob. I think they gave it a big build up this match, and it was something different when you see Hogan back at the old family home, his mum and dad there. I mean, I think comparing the two and how they packaged the two promos leading into it, I think it kind of sums up both guys. You see Flair, it's very heavy on in-ring stuff. There's nothing special that's been filmed for this promo leader, and it's just showing highlights, as you say, the kind of heel run that he's had in the last couple of years, taking out obviously the good guy stuff, and it kind of summed up Flair as a strong hand in the ring, a legend for what he's accomplished in the ring, the multi-time championships. It really showed him as Ric Flair the wrestler. The other side of the coin with Hogan in the interview in the house and the good family guy and the good guy overall kind of shows Hogan as the entertainer and Flair as the wrestler. I think it summed them up pretty well.
Do you know what I really thought about the Hogan stuff? I mean, the Flair video was very good. It was a very good long package, but there isn't really a lot you can say. It was just a well-packaged
video. A highlight reel, yeah.
Yeah. It was really nice. And we're going to listen to a Hogan promo after Halloween Havoc, where it's very much Hogan being Hogan. But it was really nice hearing Hogan do an interview and not do a promo. Like, just sit there and just speak like a normal human being, not dial it up. And I know he's got to do that sometimes, but it did a really good job, I thought, of kind of humanizing him. Whereas at times you watch him and he gets so kind of cartoony and over the top. And all right, it makes sense, but it's nice to see this side of him.
It's the recognisable face of Hogan. You turn on your TV, Hulk Hogan's on it, you know you're going to get, let me tell you something, brother, you know what, Mean Gene Hulkamania's running wild, say your prayers, take your vitamins. It was nice to see the actual human, as you say, behind
it was nice
that.
To see Terry Bollea.
Yeah, it was nice to see Terry in his house, on his couch, with his mum and dad, and actually talking instead of shouting into a... shouting into the cameras. We've seen him do multiple times over the years. I mean, something we discussed back in June when it was official that he was coming in is we'd seen so much of that Hogan character. Was it going to transfer onto a new promotion and not become stale? If WCW are looking forward to shooting stuff like this with him and seeing that man behind the character, I think it can only be good for Hogan to actually gain a new audience.
1 week from tomorrow night, this man stunning Steve Austin in action at Halloween Havoc in Detroit against Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Your opportunity to recapture the United States title, one that you said you were cheated of.
The biggest embarrassment of my career and my whole career, Gene. And if Hacksaw Jim Duggan was right here, right now on this set, I'd punch him right in his fat trap. Because I've been saying all along, somebody's going to pay. And you're going to pay, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, because nobody embarrasses stunning Steve Austin, the number one piece of wrestling talent in the world.
Oh, wait a minute. Steve Austin, you blame Ricky Steamboat. You blame Nick Bockwinkel for your recent failure.
Yeah, right, that's who I blame, because it took three men to beat me for that title. Ricky Steamboat out there telling a sad story. I almost started crying. Nick Bockwinkel brutalized me, just completely brutalized me before I even stepped in the ring for the match. Turned around, threw me into the corner, wham! It was a setup all the way, Gene. And let me tell you something, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, the good old U.S. of A., the red, white, and blue, huh? Every single time those people yell, U.S.A., U.S.A., I am going to punch you right in your fat trap.
We then move on to main event. This is the main event, the hour preceding the show, which is why I kind of leave it here. Eric Bischoff and Mean Gene Okerlund outside the Joe Louis Arena on the red carpet. Sting walks up and says, quote, the winner will lead WCW into the 90s. He said that during the show as well. I don't know why. Mr. T walks through and gets confronted by Sherry, says he doesn't know who she is. Later on in the main event, Muhammad Ali walks along the red carpet. And then to Halloween Havoc, we cut to the start of the show. Bobby Heenan wearing an amazing red sequin jacket.
Glorious sequin.
Fantastic. Worth tuning into the show for this bit alone. The announcers, it's Heenan and Schiavone in Oakland, compare Hogan and Flair to other big clashes in wrestling and beyond. Heenan says that Hulkamania ends tonight and the crowd boos. They advertise that they will ask Sting to explain why he isn't on the pay-per-view on the 900 line. I myself asked the very same question. We start the show with Johnny Badd versus the Honky Tonk Man for the WCW Television Championship. Bad comes out in an amazing grey and black sequined cape, wearing fangs and firing sparklers out from his hands. Honky Tonk Man steals the belt from the referee before the match even starts, but Bad gains the upper hand early on. Honky Tonk Man seems intent on slowing the match down when he loses the advantage. Bad hits an atomic drop, then messes up Honky's hair. I'm going to call him Honky for the sake of this, not going to call him Honky Tonk Man for the entire review. Honky gets the upper hand with a sleeper. They cut to Muhammad Ali, who is sat in the front row, looking a bit confused. Bobby Heenan says, quote, I smell a title change, or is that you, Tony? The announcers referee the time limit, as I put in my notes, a pretty good sign that this is probably going to end in a time limit draw. Bad misses a spinning elbow drop. Honky sets up for the shake, rattle and roll finisher, but Bad reverses into a back body drop. Bad charges into the corner, but Honky ducks, and Bad hits the turnbuckle hard. That made a very nice sound. Honky covers him using the ropes for leverage, but Bad kicks out. another sleeper hold, which Bad then battles out from. Bad hits a 10 punch, goes for the kiss that don't miss forearm, but Honky ducks out into a suplex. The match ends with both men brawling as we have a time limit draw. After the match, Bad celebrates on the turnbuckle, but Honky Tonk Man takes him down. They fight briefly, but Honky Tonk Man eventually runs off. There are some parts, you know, we'll probably talk later on about Hogan's kind of influence and kind of his guys. There are some guys that I don't mind, but Honky Tonk Man just seems really out of place. And Johnny Bad's been doing some very nice stuff recently, but this wasn't it.
I am going to be honest here, Bob. I think anybody that's just listened to your review of that match over the last 90 seconds has got far, far greater entertainment out of Adad watching it. For anybody that doesn't know, this pay-per-view occurred on Sunday the 23rd of October. And for anybody that would like to think at the end of October, yous are all up to date, but the clocks went back on the Saturday night, Bob. If I had
I've done away you're going with this, but carry on.
I like taking you around the world in my wee stories, Bob, as you know. If I had not been up to date with the time and actually put my clock back and tuned into the pay-per-view at the normal time, I would have been in the blessed position of missing the first hour of this show.
I thought you were going to say we thought we'd have been back in 1984. I thought you were going to...
Well, that's another thing as well. I mean, when you look at Johnny B. Badd, and he has been improving in the last couple of months as we've been seeing, if you look at Badd and you look at Honky, it's pretty much the same gimmick, but one of them's a version for the 70s and one of them's a version for the 80s. As we've spoke before, it's 1994. Why are we being subjected to the Honky Tonk Man? I mean, it was a really slow match. There was wrestled after wrestled. As you say, we knew the way the time was running down, it was going to be set up for a time limit draw. It just wasn't nice to watch.
I'm not going to dwell on it any longer than that, other than to say I completely agree. We get a video recapping Flair and Hogan feud. They did a very good job recapping, doing videos all
right through the full night. Every match felt big. You get that couple of minutes before it. It's something that WCW is really taking to heart. This month, every match, you were getting a video package. You were getting a summary of the feud if anybody had missed it in the TV. I thought it was a great way to package a pay-per-view.
Yeah, I think given that it was a pay-per-view that was propped up by a massive match, I think it helped a lot of the undercard, I think, for the audience that they just got that bit fill in. Bobby Heenan comes to the realisation that Hogan cannot possibly win with his, quote, bad wheel, referring to his knee, and Heenan says that Flair will continue to walk the aisle. Then we get the match for the WCW World Tag Team titles. pretty wonderful, Paul Orndorff and Paul Roma versus Stars and Stripes, Marcus Alexander Bagwell and the Patriot. Heenan starts a match by being convinced that the Patriot is in fact Al Gore, having found out that he's from Washington DC. The match breaks down briefly with all four men brawling. Roma does a running jump to the top rope before dropping a forearm to Bagwell. Bagwell hits a sunset flip from the top rope to Roma for a two count. Bagwell hits back-to-back body slams on Orndorff and then starts a USA chant. Patriot gets very close two count on Roma. Pretty wonderful, double team on Bagwell. Roma jumps so high for a dropkick he almost misses. Bagwell jumps off the turnbuckle for a flying crossbody for a two count. Bagwell goes for a backslide, but Roma breaks up the pin. Roma interferes again to break up the sleeper. Patriot jumps in as the match once again breaks down. Bagwell goes for a suplex with Bridge. The referee has his back turned but doesn't see it. Roma, meanwhile, gets amazing air on an elbow drop to Bagwell to break it up. Orndorff then covers Bagwell for the three count. And we have new tag team champions. Dale, what do you think of this?
Again, it's pretty much tag by numbers, Bob. It wasn't a strong start to the show for me at all after Honky in the first match. You've then got Paul Orndorff dragging his cell out for the second. Something that we've been conscious about in the last couple of weeks is thinking about kind of getting to the end of the year and thinking about the end of the year awards. We've just seen a national promotions tag titles change hands. We've seen the former champion Stars and Stripes. We've seen the new champions Pretty Wonderful. I don't think either of these teams would be number one. I don't think they would be top five. I think you could even be stretching to get either of them in top 10 tag teams in the mat.
I don't know, top 10. I know what you mean. Neither of these are the best tag team in the promotion right now. But it says a lot that I'm I've just read through my review and I watched this show, you know, 10 or so days ago, and I can't remember much about it.
I've literally got a couple of lines of notes, and most of it was, say, talking about the top tag teams that I could think of at the minute and try to list other ones for other promotions and even some of the ones in this one. And it just wasn't a... It wasn't a great match. For me, it started with a couple of 4 out of 10 matches so far.
Yeah. Then we move on. Mean Gene Okerlund is backstage with Ric Flair. We get a Flair and Sherry promo, quite similar-ish to the one that you heard at the top of this WCW part. Schiavone asks, quote, whether the Price is Right line means they've got Mr. T. Flair mentions that line in his promo. Video recap of the Dave and Kevin Sullivan feud. Then we get to Kevin Sullivan versus Dave Sullivan. Dave comes out to the ring in the road and magic slippers that Hogan has given to him in recent weeks on WCW Saturday Night. His theme music is a dance track with I'm a Hulkamaniac lyrics, what you will. Match moves to the outside early on. Kevin rams Dave into the ring post. Kevin grabs the Hogan bandana from ringside, then sticks into Dave's throat. Kevin then imitates Hogan by cupping his ear. Kevin goes to the top, but Dave throws him off. Dave hits a Hogan big boot, but doesn't do a very good job of it. Kevin imitates putting Hogan's bandana on, almost as an act of surrender, but when Dave gets too close, Kevin punches him. They brawl on the outside, and Kevin Sullivan gets counted out. We're 3 for 3 on bad matches here, Dale, I think.
I'm struggling, Bob.
I watched the show 8 days ago. I can't remember anything from these first three matches.
It was just... This pretty much takes us up to the first hour. It's not been pretty so far. I mean, the first thing that I've wrote down is we've got Dave, we've got Kevin. It's a fight between brothers with bad blood. All you need to do is go to New York. You're going to get Bret Hart versus Owen Hart. That's brothers. That's family feuds. That's bad blood. This is what WCW comes up with. I'm really trying to be positive here. I do actually quite like Dave's gimmick, this Hulkamaniac, the coming out with the new song, as you say, we're coming out with the Hulk gear. It's actually something that could be pretty interesting, but this just wasn't a pretty match. And then the end as well, you've got this months of bad treatment for Kevin on Dave, and we end with a count out for a finish.
They've given Dave Sullivan a ton of exposure in the last 2 months on TV. A ton, and they're going to give him a bit more. He's going to be in the main event of the Clash of the Champions next month. We'll come to that.
Tune in next month, folks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Thankfully, we've got other shows to prop up that podcast. I have quite a difficult job liking Dave. I mean, it's just... What part of the Hulkamania's number one fan is really easy to get behind? And I get the sense a lot of the crowd are thinking that as well. Okay, the problem is that the feud's not all that interesting. Dave Sullivan's not all that compelling. The match was pretty awful. And that's pretty much it.
So what we would do is then prop up the younger brother and kind of get him on the coattails of the champion of the company and then elevate his older brother into the top heel faction in the company as well. It's a no-brainer, Bob.
Thank you for the spoiler there. We will move on. We get a video recap of Dustin and Arn Anderson. Then we get Arn Anderson with Conor Holt Parker and Meng versus Dustin Rhodes. Anderson complains that Rhodes keeps grabbing his hair, or what he has left of it anyway. Rhodes hits an atomic drop and a lariat. Rhodes climbs to the top, but Anderson knocks him off. Rhodes climbs back up and hits a lariat from the top rope. The match drops to the outside. Anderson swings an arm but ends up punching the ring post after Dustin ducks. Dustin locks in an armbar as he works over Double A's left arm. Dustin charges at Anderson, but Anderson pulls down the top rope and Rhodes goes flying over the top rope to the outside. Keep a note of that. Dustin gets a body scissors on Anderson from a horizontal position, but Anderson turns it around and drives his neck into the bottom rope. Anderson goes for a snap DDT, but Dustin grabs the rope as Double A drops to the mat. Dustin goes for a knee drop on Double A's arm, but he moves it. Anderson goes for a pin, but uses the ropes and the ref spots it. While Anderson argues with the ref, Dustin goes for a pin and wins the match. After the match, Anderson attacks Dustin, and Meng and Parker make it a 3-on-1 attack. Dale, this was better. This was...
The wrestling started. It's a feud that's had a bit of interest. Obviously, there was the full story with Dustin trying to find a tag team partner, and they take on the stud stable. It's obviously led to this match after the turn for Arn Anderson to join Bob Parker. It's led to a good match. You've got Arn Anderson, who's been performing as solid as a wrestler can over the last 5-10 years. He's a really, really good worker. Dustin Rhodes, obviously, a young up-and-comer. It was just nice to actually get a wrestle match that you could get into.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't special, but it was good. It was very good. And as you said, compared to the first hour...
Compared to the first hour, it looked like a match of the year candidate, Bob. I think we were just glad that we could put the razor blades down.
Is this feud, this whole kind of Dustin and effectively kind of Rock Parker, is this feud kind of beginning to lose its legs? I mean, the action's good, but I mean, what didn't the story end last month at Full Brawl with
that's it. It's a bit of a complicated booking situation when you're coming off a multi-man tag match. You've got the two rings, you've got the War Games ending. That's pretty much your pinnacle for a match peaking and a feud peaking. Having the one-on-one after, as much as we were happy to see it for a wrestling match point of view, for the regular WCW viewers, it's going to be a little bit of a come down after last month, obviously.
And when are they going to pull the trigger on Meng? I mean, we had the big angle in August with the bit of the clash where Meng gets the chair dumped over his head by Dusty Rhodes and no sell it. And since then, I don't think he's wrestled once.
And he's still like a caged animal on the outside, just walking around a ring. They've got Parker. They don't need another heater there. They've got Parker there. They don't need the muscles to back him up as well. Let the guy in the ring. We've obviously seen his work in the past. We know what he can do. We need to see him.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just don't really get it. It's, the iron will cool off, and it's kind of like, well, maybe you don't think he's the guy, but you gave him an angle like that, and you gave him that beatdown that we saw on the Nasty Boys after Full Brawl that ended up airing on WCW Saturday night. Massive beatdown, made him look like an absolute beast. And yet when it comes to the action, he just stands at ringside and looks really tough, and yeah. That's it. And you know, wait two more months and all of a sudden, the opportunity might be lost. Anyway, we move on. Mean Gene Okerlund backstage with Hulk Hogan, Jimmy Hart, and quote-unquote the Big Brother. How many different nicknames we got for Brutus the Barber Beefcake in this show? He's being called the Butcher now, by the way, but they do call him the Big Brother and Brother Brutai and the Butcher this month.
The Butcher as well, yeah.
You can understand my confusion, I hope, at least. Hogan's promo references Slammy Andre, which, when don't they? Says there's only room for one man. Hogan says he isn't worried about Mr. T, says he knows he's quote-unquote still on the level, and doesn't mention his knee! What's the point in doing the big angle on WCW Saturday night that the whole... Because here's the thing, right, I don't want to do too much on this, but... We have the thing with Flair agreeing to put his career on the line, and it might sound stupid in many ways it was, but the whole reason Flair agreed on the 2nd of October edition of WCW Saturday Night, or the 1st even, the whole reason he agreed to put his, to have the tag match and put his career on the line at Halloween Havoc was so that in the tag match, as we saw, he could beat Daniel Hogan and injure his knee to weaken Hogan so that Flair could beat him at Halloween Havoc. It made a lot of sense, and that was executed perfectly. And yet Hogan gets here, doesn't mention, says Mr. T's absolutely fine, and says his knee's fine. What's the point of building this whole storyline?
Yeah. Focus the full show on it, and then it's just no sold at the last minute.
I don't know. Hogan should win the match. I'm not saying that. But you've built up the month of Hogan being in doubt. At least sell it going into the match rather than just diffuse like your main heats in the match or before it in the feud. Anyway, there's that. We cut to Bobby Heenan, who says he doesn't detect any confidence in Hogan's voice. Then, WCW United States title match. Stunning Steve Austin versus Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Austin attacks Duggan from the get-go. They throw some heavy right hands. Austin's trunks say US champ on the back. Austin goes to work Duggan's leg and knee. Austin, on his knees, offers a handshake, but Duggan simply says, get up, you son of a bitch. Austin goes to drop a double axe handle from the top, but Duggan cuts him off in mid-flight. Austin pins the referee in the corner, then kicks Duggan between the legs with the referee's vision impaired, but the referee reprimands Austin nonetheless. Austin goes for a splash from the top, but Duggan rolls out the way. Duggan fires up the crowd. Duggan charges at Austin, but Austin pulls the top rope down and throws him over the top for the DQ. And we get a DQ finish. Yes, remember, in the previous match, over the top rope, nothing.
Yeah.
In the next match, spoiler alert, over the top rope, nothing. In this match, DQ. I don't get it.
Have your rant, Bob. Get it off your chest. I know you.
What's it? I'm done. I don't get this. I thought I enjoyed the show when I watched it, but going back through it was awful. It gets better, thankfully. But what the? I don't know. Like
something that I match never got going. I don't know what WCW think of their audience, Bob. But in the middle of this match, there was a spot with Steve Austin on his knees, extending his hand to Hacksaw. The story behind this, obviously, Hacksaw was getting a bit of momentum. Steve Austin's playing the baddie, wants to sucker in Hacksaw, give him the handshake, and then attack him. The match with Kevin Sullivan and Dave Sullivan had the exact same spot in it. And we're talking, what, 10, 15 minutes ago? We're then going, as you say, the top rope situation. The exact same thing happened in the last match with no counter-argument, with no consequence in the back of it. And then this one, it ends the match. It's like, do people in WCW office think it's a goldfish audience? I just don't understand it.
But when has it been a rule? Like, when was that ever a rule? And why is it applied so haphazardly?
I think it's an old NWA thing, Bob. I think it was a rule in the 80s, but the issue that WCW's got with us, as we've said, I mean, we say this every month with regards to...
Well, according to Sting, we're still in the 80s.
Well, yeah, we're leading into the 90s now after tonight, October the 23rd in 1994. This is us kind of just breaking down the walls of the 1990s. But I mean, again, WCW's just got an issue with consistency, and we say it every month with finishes, with dodgy booking decisions, and again with the execution of this rule as well. It's like, it's really confusing, and it's really difficult to try and get people for a new audience coming into it as well, because obviously they're seeing something last year to this year, you can understand it. Last month, maybe. Seeing something for a quarter an hour ago and being expected to understand why it happened once but not twice, it's just really hard.
Who knows? Anyway, you'll be pleased to know that for my own health, I actually really enjoyed the rest of this show anyway. we start with Mean Gene Oakland introducing Sting. Sting, once again, says he's going to park himself in the front row and, quote, see who will lead wrestling into the 90s. Yes, he did say that twice this evening. We then get to the Guardian Angel versus Vader. Now, the Guardian Angel comes out flanked by other members of the Guardian Angels. Vader gets in Muhammad Ali's face, who does seem to enjoy it a bit too much, but Muhammad Ali isn't in the greatest of condition these days. Guardian Angel attacks Harley Race. Vader, who's kind of warming up on the outside, doesn't even skip a beat. He just looks a bit disappointed. Vader knocks Angel over the top rope. No disqualification! There it is.
No disqualification over the top rope rule, Bob.
We continue. Vader charges Angel on the outside, but Angel gets out of the way and Vader eats some guardrail. Angel attacks Race back in the ring. Angel does a pretty ropey body slam on Vader, but dumps him on top of Harley Race, so probably the highlight of the match. Angel catches Vader from jumping from the top rope and body slams into the floor, or to the ring rather. Angel hits a headbutt from the top rope for a two count. We get an odd spot where Vader seems to clothesline Angel, but doesn't connect properly. Angel is spark out and Vader is feeling his arm. Vader hits a Vader bomb for a two. Vader goes for another, but Angel gets his knees up. Angel hits an impressive spine buster for a two count. Angel hits a side slam, but Race distracts him, and Angel goes after him again. And then, this was another good bit as well. Angel suplexes Race in the ring, but as he lands, Vader runs over, jumps, splashes on top of Guardian Angel, and picks up the win. This was very good. I really like this.
Something that we will very, very rarely see in a WCW show, Bob. I loved the finish. It was really, really good.
I hope I did it justice, but essentially, as Angel was doing the suplex to Race, Vader runs over, and as he lands, he jumps on top of him. It was great.
He jumps right on top of him. And it's really good logical storytelling as well. Race is there. He's looking after his number one guy, and he's taking one for the team. He takes the suplex. Vader sees what's happening, runs in, steals the victory. Really good bad guy move. And as I say, it's really well thought out, especially when we've looked at the last couple of finishes. And I mean, it's something that we see every month with these guys as well, Bob. I mean, Vader's agility in this match was a couple of lovely things, as you said. We kind of really highlighted that with the jumping off the top rope into a power slam for the former boss, the Guardian Angel. It's just this amazing at his size, the things that he can do.
No, I mean, this wasn't quite as good as their match at Spring Stampede, which is one of my favourite matches this year, nor was it quite as long, but they've done this match four or five times now this year, and this was easily the second best. I thought they got this right. And I should also say that in the four or five times they've done this match this year on pay-per-view and on clashes, I think this might only be the second one that's finished with a clean finish, and it was the second best one.
I think you're right, yeah.
And then, what was there, because they had the triangle match which ended with Race getting involved last month, and then there's been at least one more, and anyway. But this was very good. Then we get Mean Gene Okerlund introducing Thomas the Hitman Hearns, who does a very nondescript promo on the stage. Then the Nasty Boys, Brian Knobbs and Jerry Sags versus Terry Funk and Bunkhouse Buck with Colonel Robert Parker and Meng. Sags carries a pumpkin on his shoulder out to the ring. I put in my notes, I wonder if this will play a part in the finish. We shall see.
I wonder.
Heenan asks if the pumpkin is the likeness of Sags. Very good. Funk goes after Buck early on after getting confused. I love this match. Funk's great. Knobs unloads on both men early on. Funk grabs a chair at ringside but decides against using it. Sags sits on Funk's face. Funk gets up and calls him a son of a bitch. The Nasties get Bunk and Funk in the corner. God, don't get that wrong. And loads of series of punches on, loads a series of punches on both men. Funk hits himself over the head about a dozen times, then climbs over the guardrail for no reason at all. Buck strangles Sags with a rope with the referee's back turned. Buck loads his glove, but then the referee spots it. Men climbs onto the apron, but hits Funk after Sags ducks. Sag pile drives Terry Funk onto a pumpkin to win the match. I love this. About 6 minutes. If you like technical wrestling, if you like scientific wrestling, there's almost none of it. But I love this match.
Yep. I mean, we spoke briefly before, Bob. I can't even remember if it was on the podcast, but we spoke about the logic in turning the Nasty Boys into faces. I thought they'd done brilliant tonight. They've got the spots with the armpits in the corner. They brought out the pumpkin. They've done the pile driver on it for the end. They've really embraced this role, and I think, I mean, looking back to the tag match for earlier, why is this not get the belts involved? You're seeing Terry Funk is as good a madman as you're going to get in the business. It's probably the most it's legitimate, but it's really nice to see him still doing what he does. The Nasties, as I say, have really embraced what they've been doing in the last while since their turn. It was just, this is how you do a tag match.
Even Bunkhouse Buck was a riot in this match. Like, he's growing on me as well. This was
does his job as well, yeah.
Again, if you like, you know, scientific wrestling isn't a thing that, you know, it does a lot for me. This is the kind of thing I like. Just characters being a bit wild and being a bit crazy. And that finish, because not only was it like a pile driver onto a pumpkin, the pumpkin just disintegrated so wonderfully.
Oh, it was beautifully shot.
Just fantastic. I mean, the whole, as I say, it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea. I really enjoyed it. Then we get a presentation with Bill Shaw, Mean Gene Okerlund, Eric Bischoff and Muhammad Ali. They present a check to Ali for the Future Foundation and Bischoff gives him a flack. Mean Gene Okerlund gave Eric Bischoff a rather kind of long-winded and sucky-uppy introduction here. Talked about how much he'd like all the sweat and tears and bloody
blood, sweat and tears that he's poured into the performance of this show and,
whatever. Anyway, the main event. WCW World Heavyweight Championship cage match, career versus career, with the special guest of Mr. T. It's Hulk Hogan with Jimmy Hart and Big Brother versus Ric Flair with Sensuous Sherry. We get early Hogan sucks chance as he comes out and a big reaction for Flair, but it's split. I should say it's split. Hogan dominates the early going for a 10 punch, but then uses the cage for leverage, kicking Flair in the corner. Mr. T reprimands him for it. Flair rammed Hogan's head off the cage. Hogan returns the favour a minute later. Hogan then puts Flair on his shoulders and rams his head into the cage. Mr. T once again gets physical with Hogan, allowing Flair to get the advantage. Flair hits a vertical suplex to Hogan. The pair exchange blows and Flair shakes to try and escape the cage. Not that that would win the match. This is pinfall and submission. Hogan climbs up with him and chokes him on top of the cage. Flair then gets crotched on the top rope and Hogan drives Flair's head off the cage again. Flair tries to escape again. He gets a lot further this time but gets compromised and Hogan attacks him as he's trying to climb over the top. Flair works Hogan's vulnerable knee, goes to remove Hogan's knee strapping, but Mr. T pushes him to the floor. Flair locks in the figure four. Hogan writhes in pain. Hogan gets up, crashes into Mr. T. Mr. T gets knocked out on the floor, and Flair starts attacking Mr. T. Then this. This is going to be confusing and long-winded, but I'm going to do my best to explain it. Sherry, from the outside, goes to climb the cave, but Jimmy Hart pulls down and rips off her dress. Sherry pushes Hart into the cameraman, goes to climb back into the cage, but Sting this time pulls her off. Don't forget, Sting sat at ringside. The Masked Man then comes out and attacks Sting. Sherry climbs for a third time, gets over the rope, over the cage, and does a double axe handle. The Masked Man then climbs onto the cage as they handcuff Mr. T to the rope. Flair rams Hogan's head off of the steel pipe, which the Masked Man brought along with him. Hogan halts up, the crowd go with him. Hogan does a double clothesline to Flair and Sherry, then body slams them both. Does a big boot to Sherry, a big boot to Flair, then the leg drop. Hogan pulls Flair over towards Mr. T, who's still got his handcuffs to the rope. Hogan pins Flair, Mr. T counts it, wins, and the crowd pop big. We'll deal with the aftermath in a minute. Dale, what did you think of the match?
The match itself, I really liked it. It really delivered. I mean, there was a lot of overbooting involved. I mean, even just looking back at your introduction there to the match, you're talking cage match, career versus career. Hogan's coming out with Brother Brutai / Brutus the Barber Beefcake / The Butcher / God knows what else they're calling him. He's there. You've got Michael Buffer at the start. God knows how much they spent in the pyro before the match. You've got the cage coming down. You've got Flair there with Sherry. It shouldn't really be a surprise to anybody that it was overbooked at the end. But for what it was...
I don't think it was badly overbooked, though. There's a lot to it. As I say, I had to pause during the middle just to kind of get people prepared. You're going to get an overload of information here. But as it played out, it kind of fit. And I will get quite offended if there's an overbooked kind of match. But this was overbooked in a way that I actually think enhanced it.
It kind of did at the end. I mean, obviously the way that it was built up, and we're obviously looking at the potential retirement, or at least storyline wise, definite retirement of one of the biggest legends in the business, be it Flair or Hogan. So you can understand the bells and whistles being through at it. But I say for the match itself, I just thought it delivered. There was a couple of, I mean, it's WCW, wouldn't expect anything else, but a wee bit of kind of logic holes with Mr. T getting handcuffed to the ropes and things. But, as I said, for the match itself, it really delivered. We won't talk about the aftermath at the minute, but as a match, I thought it really, really delivered, and it was possibly my match of the night.
My match of the night was the match before, but largely for comedic reasons. This was very good. I mean, some people said, you know, they could have gone and had a classic and you could have stripped it all away and just had a heel Flair and face Hogan match. Fair enough. But we've seen that twice. So I think to a point they had to add a couple of things onto it, including the career versus career stipulation.
That's the issue that I think they had, Bob. I mean, back in June, when Hogan came in, we were kind of speculating at what they would do with Hogan and his opponents when it was that short-term contract. We'd maybe look at kind of different people that he would face. We've inevitably just seen Ric Flair in the three matches that he's had. So, I mean, they had to kind of pull something different out here, and I think they delivered on it.
No, and the action was good. You know, right, there's times when why is Flair trying to climb out the cage? As I say, you certainly couldn't win by escaping the cage.
By escape, yeah.
The action was good, and we got all the interference, and, you know, Hogan, you know, coming back from a 3-1 beatdown, it's Hogan-level stuff. We know what we're going to get. Anyway, to the aftermath. The cage rises up, Hogan celebrates, Flair just walks off. We'll address that later on. Hogan celebrates with Muhammad Ali, who presents him with the title belt. Then the Masked Man comes up and squares up to him. Hogan stops him and reveals him to be Big Brother, a.k.a. Brother Brutai, a.k.a. The Butcher, a.k.a. Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Called The Butcher going forward, but I do want to ram home how many different names they used here. He stood and distracted Hogan, and out came Kevin Sullivan and Avalanche. You will know Avalanche as John Tenta or Earthquake. They beat down on Hogan, and then Sting came out and ran them off. Del, we're going to discuss this properly kind of after the end of the WCW TV review in a few minutes, so I don't want to speak too much about the people involved, but what do you think of the angle? Because I actually thought the angle was very good.
The angle itself has definitely got legs. I mean, I think the potential of that storyline with it being the Butcher that's the Masked Man, I think it's definitely got legs from a Hogan point of view. We've seen kind of pre-match with the promo and the interview backstage with me and Gene, the Butcher standing right by his side. We even see him coming out at the start of this match with Hogan side by side and having that kind of shock moment at the end. It did deliver. I mean, it was one of the things where, I mean, I think even going back a couple of months, there was an illusion from Heenan that it was a perfect moment in time when the Masked Man had talked, kind of leading us to maybe think it was Mr. Perfect or Kurt Hennig. So, I mean, I think there was a lot of expectation for that reveal when it came. And I think it was a strong reveal when it happened. I mean, the idea of Hogan again now being faced after hitting the 11-time world champion in Flair, he saw him off, where do you go from that? And having the idea of a heel faction going after Hogan, it certainly got legs.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was stronger than... we'll come to the people involved in a minute, but I think rather than giving people an opportunity to dwell on Flair and kind of think, well, how do you follow that? You hit people with it so quickly, you kind of almost don't have time to think about it. And maybe that was a good way of filling in the gap. Anyway, we will continue now with the WCW TV review for the last weekend of the month.
You know something, Jimmy Hart, you little mouse, you're driving me crazy with all your gaga on this world title belt, man. You know there's nothing more important to me than the friendship that I had with the Butcher, man, the so-called brother that when we were kids took a piece of glass and as I etched his hand, he etched mine and we bonded together from day one, man. The miles and miles, piles of trials that we faced, every person we stepped in the ring with, man, every step of the way, man, he looked me in the eye and he said, I'll never leave you, man. I love you like you're my own brother. And as we walked that road all the way to the top, Jimmy Hart, when you weren't even there, how dare you get in my face? This man meant more to me than anybody else. And as far as I'm concerned, when you did what you did to me, brother, at Halloween Havoc, it was like you tore the heart and the soul out of everybody that believed in us, man. Every little Hulkamaniac that walked and pushed us over every hurdle we went through, man. But I gotta tell you something, brother. When they put your mom and dad 6 feet under, when I left my own family, when I was having problems with my own brother, when I stood by your side as they put that last shovel of dirt on your parents, you looked me in the eye, and you told me that you love me, man. You told me that you stick by me forever and a day. And you told me that if anybody ever jumped in my face, man, you'd be there to pull him back. Well, as we went to the WCW, as I became the heavyweight champion, man, you trained with me, you lived with me, and you helped push me through everything we went through, especially the workouts. And as I told you my battle plan, as I told you how I was going to set Flair up, how I was going to embarrass him, take him out and beat him, little did I know, you'd already crossed that line. You already sold out, man. And you were setting me up for the kill. I'm going to tell you something right now, brother. I'm going to tell Jimmy Hart something right now. You stay out of my way. The rule book has been thrown out, man. And I'm coming for one thing. A little piece of your soul.
On to the October 29th edition of the show, where we start with Avalanche, the Butcher, as he is now known, and Kevin Sullivan coming out of the Three Faces of Fear. The team will face Hulk Hogan, Sting, and Dave Sullivan at the Clash of the Champions. Dustin Rhodes will face Vader. Steve Austin versus Jim Duggan. Jolly Bad versus the Honky Tonk Man, and the Nasty Boys versus Harlem Heat. We get a video package that airs for Jolly Bad, looking at his pre-WCW career as an amateur boxer before his career was ended by his nose being shattered. He said he came in as a boxer to wrestling, but had to train and adapt to his all-round game. He says he believes one day he will become the WCW World Heavyweight Champion. In the main, well, not really the main event, although kind of the last match on the show, Sting wins a squash, then goes to cut a promo, and was joined by Dave Sullivan. The pair were then interrupted by Kevin Sullivan. Kevin Sullivan and Sting get into an impromptu brawl in the ring, which saw Avalanche and the Butcher run out and join them in a 3-on-2 beatdown. Hogan was nowhere to be found, not in the building. Del, let's start with Flair. because we could have done a massive segment on Flair retiring, but almost given the news and given the, you know, the thought process that he's probably coming back, it's, you know, we should talk about it. When some people say, you know, they insulted his career by, you know, having him sneak off so quickly. But if he is coming back, I think they probably got it right, didn't they? Don't dwell on it too long.
I think that's, I mean, the way that it was shown on camera at the end of that match, it was all about Hogan. And I mean, it kind of depends your viewpoint. I mean, as you say, we're already hearing rumblings about comeback matches within a period of 4 or 5 months. You can understand it from that point of view that you don't want to focus on it too much. But then at the same time, you're getting people that's maybe tuned in, big fans of Ric Flair in the NWA. God, is he still wrestling? Oh, he's fighting Hogan. He was a WWF. Oh, I need to watch this. If they're tuning in for just that and they see Flair just disappear at the end, you can understand it from their point of view as well. I mean, it's just where we're going to lead to now after this. I mean, is Flair done? Is Flair going to be coming back? Is Flair negotiating way up north? I mean, it's something that we kind of really need to see the longer term story. We've just got to kind of believe in WCW that they do have it sorted and they've got Flair. They're getting him signed. They're going to have him back as a...
Well, they've got him signed. We covered that in the news. He's got a contract and he is head booker, so he is there. But obviously on TV, that's going to play out slightly differently. And as I say, I don't think he's going to, I don't think they're going to tease that anytime soon. But yeah, I mean, I don't hate what they did. You know, if it was a true retirement, then yeah, they should have followed up on it a lot more.
Yeah.
And maybe you could say, well, you know, it's wrestling and, you know, does anyone truly retire? And, well, in theory, no. And there's no guarantee he comes back. I mean, the reports are that he will, and I suspect that he might, given that I get the sense they're going to run out of, well, not necessarily opponents for Hogan very quickly, in the sense that I don't think they're going to bring Flair back to face Hogan again that quickly. But in terms of the talking about perhaps Flair coming back as a babyface and teaming with Hogan, there's certainly something there if you can, well, so we're going to come on to pick up a perhaps a better level of opposition than the three faces of fear. But I thought it was fine in that regard. And I kind of like the idea, even if it was a true retirement. I think Flair is the heel. Like, how does he stick around and retire but maintain that heel character? Now, I guess you could say, well, he doesn't need to. But how does he not turn face if you linger on the retirement? He doesn't.
Exactly. We don't want, we've seen it pre-match with the promo. We've built up Flair as a strong guy. We've built him up as his legacy. You can't really have that celebratory factor to it, i.e. maybe Flair coming out on a Saturday night and kind of thanking the fans. We don't want to expose that side of it if there is a comeback down the line. You would like to think if WCW is putting this level of stock investment into the storylines and into the retirement angle and the Hogan build up, all these things coming together, you want Flair to come back as a bad guy and you want to think that they've maybe got Hogan signed up for a longer period than he was initially, so you want him to keep that mystique and keep that bad guy persona there, as you say.
Let's move on to the three faces of fear, specifically the Butcher. We're not going to do all the name jokes now, but the Butcher, aka Brutus the Barber Beefcake, as you all know. The Butcher, Kevin Sullivan, and Avalanche, aka Earthquake and, well, / John Tenta.
I can't deal with it, Bob. You start.
Oh, well, let me go. I mean, The bit with the Butcher, in theory, makes sense. But the problem is that, you know, the idea that, you know, they were lifelong friends, as you've heard with the Hogan promo just there, and all that stuff, it makes sense. But it's not a story they really told. I mean, okay, the Butcher was hung around with Hogan, he was in the back, he was in the background, but they didn't tell that story enough of them being, like, massively close friends. Well, they said they worked out and whatever. But I never saw the Butcher, they never really, like, fleshed out the Butcher character in WCW, really. He's only been around for a few months since Hogan joined. But he just looked a bit lame when he stood kind of by Hogan's side. I kind of thought, what are you doing there? What did Hogan need you for? I kind of look at Jimmy Hart in the same way. It's like, what purpose does Jimmy Hart serve at the side of Hulk Hogan? And so that wasn't that effective. Then we get Kevin Sullivan, Kevin Sullivan has a few good qualities, but, you know, given his age and given his look...
And given his remarkably small pants.
That as well. Shouldn't be in I don't believe should be in a position of this high quality. But at least it fits in with the storyline of Kevin and Dave and David's
Steve.
But, and we will come to those two guys and whether they should be in an angle this level in a minute. I cannot explain why Avalanche is in this group. What does he bring? I've no idea.
I'm speechless, Bob.
He's just fat. That's it. Rather than having the earthquake thing, he has like a different level like graphic like round his waist because it's an avalanche. It's a different spike. I fantasy booked this on the spot. Let me run this one by you. The Butcher comes out after the match as the Masked Man. Hogan whips off the mask. Butcher distracts him, and out comes not Kevin Sullivan and not Avalanche, but Meng. Meng proceeds to beat the living hell out of Hulk Hogan. And the story they tell, and we're only up to October here, so I don't have to flesh it out very much. The story they tell is very single. The Butcher has found someone better than Hogan. And that's it. We don't have to have Avalanche. We don't have to have Kevin Sullivan. Dave Sullivan doesn't main event Clash of the Champions. And we've got our next hot feud. Way better than what they've done. And it's just, let's say, the angle was good. The angle at the end of the show was good. But I'm just looking at thinking, if I was to randomly pick three members of the WCW roster, could I come up with a combination worse than this? I'm not sure I could.
I don't get it, Bob. And I think the way that we're looking at it, we always try and be positive about the product, and I do feel like we've just been really, really miserable about this show with regards to certain things like the first hour, this faction. I think it's because of the care and the passion for the product, and especially long term, this is, to me at least, really worrying. When you're looking at this...
The Starcade is going to be Hulk Hogan and Avalanche.
Over
Hulk Hogan and Vader. That's the match Hulk Hogan has nixed to face Avalanche. And what's interesting, perhaps, is that, you know, Hogan, part of the reason they did this big match and this big angle is that Hogan and the people at WCW are trying to negotiate a new Hogan contract because Hogan hasn't signed yet. And so we're going to get the Starcade, and in theory at least, Hogan will have signed. God, Lord forbid if Hogan hasn't signed, he has to drop the title to Avalanche. I think I might just, we'll just...
Where do you go for there,
We'll just do WWF and ECW 95 if that happens. But, you know, that's in theory the match. But if Hogan really thinks... Because the contract is that however many buys the pay-per-view gets, Hulk Hogan gets a cut above the average. So they have their average for the run of pay-per-views before Hogan arrived. Whatever pay-per-view increase that Hogan generates for each show, he gets a cut of that. So you would think it would be in Hogan's interest to pick the best views that are likely to make the most money. And I cannot believe that Hogan can sit there, even as a businessman, even as selfish as you might want, and go, Avalanche is better than Vader. I don't get it. But they're friends. But we will see how this storyline plays. Again, the angle was good, but this group...
you've got a three-man faction as well. I mean, is this what we're going to see, where Hogan's booked his cell into a position with Avalanche for Starcade? We're again going to get to the start of 1995. Is he then going to be going up against...
Against
Sullivan? Is that us booked up into the middle of spring next year? It's frightening.
Lord forbid if it is.
Unless that is what the fear in the name entails, Bob, because it's certainly got us rattled.
I can't argue with that. Del, we'll come back to the pay-per-view, your score rating out of 10, and your brief, your brief thoughts on WCW this month.
I think the best way that you can sum it up, Bob, purely based off the pay-per-view itself, is it's one of those shows that we've seen before where it sums up the best and worst of WCW. You're seeing, I've already made my moans, I won't recap them again, about the first hour. You've got the main event that was built up. It was a great match. It was involvement. There was the tag team match with the Nasties that had some really good comedic stuff. Really good seeing the Nasties really kind of grab that that good guy role that they've been given. And we, as I say, were dubious before. You've got the match with Arn Anderson and Dustin Rhodes that delivered for me. Stunning Steve Austin just makes me laugh every time he's there. He plays the obnoxious bad guy so well.
Austin is making the very most out of the opportunities he's been given.
That's it. He's really maximising the opportunities that he's been given. And I mean, when you look at how he was booked last month with that 30-second turnaround with Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Bob, who I think is a previous associate of the champion. Is that...
Yeah, I don't have such a big problem with Duggan as I do with Avalanche and Beefcake, in the sense that I think, like, Duggan can still be a level of babyface, and I do still sort of enjoy
Well, you see
that.
The crowd reaction, and I mean, it's as basic a principle as you're going to get. You commit with an American flag and a catchphrase, you're going to be there, and if you're
not... It's not even a catchphrase, it's just USA.
Well, yeah.
It's as primeval and as basic as you're likely to get, but I don't object to Duggan as much as I do.
But it still works, yep. But as I say, moving on through that. Well, I've given it a 5 overall. As I say, there was good things there. The bad stuff really brought it down for me. I mean, the first three matches I've rated as 4, 4 and 3. So can I get an overall average of 5? I think I've been pretty fair there.
I've given it a 6. I must admit, before we reviewed the show, I was probably going to give it a slightly higher score. But then going back through my notes, I realised just how bad that first hour was and how illogical some of the stuff was in the middle. That all being said, I thought the last three matches were all very good.
Exactly. The tag match was good. The main event was there. As we say, there is positives in this. We don't want people to think that we've just wrote off the full show. There is definitely lights at the end of the tunnel, but the inconsistencies through the middle of it and the first hour and the kind of things leading on for it, we can't overlook that.
But that tag match was an absolute hoot.
Brilliant.
It's just kind of four guys again. Like Terry Funk can be a very good wrestler when he needs to be, but there's very little wrestling ability on show. It's just four guys going slightly mad, and it made for great television.
Yeah.
And that will end this part of the show. We are going to move on after the break, talking some ECW.
Very streets in this very hood with Deaf Enemy. You remember Deaf Enemy when we were kids? Johnny, you remember Deaf Enemy?
Never gonna forget him.
And this was the life. This was our life. This was the only life. The only life we knew on these streets here. This is all we had. We never had a taste, we never had a flavor, we never had anything for life. But these streets, this was our home. And then 1 year ago, they dropped us off in front of the ECW arena. And we became wrestlers. Wrestlers, Johnny. And it didn't take us long, because we rose to the top. Fast. And we became tag team champions of the ECW. And then Cactus Jack, Mikey Whipwreck.
You better remember one thing, boys. We're more afraid of living than dying. So you better be more afraid of winning than losing. Because, Cactus Jack, we got a flavor for life. We got a taste for life. And we want our belts back. And I saw the fear in your eyes. I saw the fear when I swung my bat, and I never swung at no baseball. But once you're on the streets and you see the fear in a man's eyes, he's going down. And I knew at that very second
Johnny, I knew on November to remember that we would be tag team champs again.
Remember one thing, boys. We're naughty by nature and violent by design.
We are discussing ECW. Dell, start us off with the news.
Biggest story this month, Bob. I think we need to start with the possible climax of the recent few days, Sandman and Tommy Dreamer. These two competed in the Brutal I Quit match, which proved to be the hardcore TV match in the month. The emergency services were required at the end of the match, where Sandman's eye was burned by his own cigarette, and he's not been seen on TV since the event happened. Dreamer then cut an emotional promo the following week, saying that he was now wrestling on behalf of the Sandman, and fans were invited to call the ECW 900 line and comment on whether Dreamer should be suspended and also leave well wishes for the Sandman. Later in the month, a promo for next month's November to Remember advertised Sandman to appear, but also to announce his retirement. And adding to the Sandman's issues, his manager, Woman, has now left his side and will announce the next act she would, quote, take to the top at the same show. As for Dreamer, he's now moving on to a feud with Tommy Cairo. You might remember Cairo's last feud with the Sandman earlier in the year. Tommy Cairo returned to TV this month via satellite with Joey Styles, showing absolutely no remorse for the Sandman's injury, and Dreamer is now taking that to heart. And another sign of ECW's new extreme philosophy was the showing of last month's match between Sabu and Cactus Jack. The match itself was widely seen as disappointing in contrast to their first meeting, but it is reported Sabu's carrying bruised, if not broken, ribs. This still didn't stop him taking a springboard moonsault to the outside, landing in the guardrail during the match. But as per Sabu's injuries, the match did involve a lot of assistance from 911 and Polly Dangerously, as well as Cactus doing much of the heavy lifting. The closing of the match saw Sabu break a glass beer bottle over Cactus's head, and it was in the seventh attempt that he did so successfully.
I've seen it over and over and over again. I close my eyes and I can see it. I read newspapers, letters. I hear about it wherever I go. Tommy Dreamer's an emotional wreck. Sandman, they don't still know what's the matter. Sandman, I went to hit you. I didn't mean to hit you in the eye and blind you. Nancy, I'm sorry for everything that happened in the back. Sandman, I can't get out of my head. I see the people's eyes. I wanted to give the people in ECW a hardcore I quit match. But I didn't want to take out anybody's eye. And if that means I'm not hardcore, then I'm not hardcore. Sam, in everything I do in my life, in my career, I do it for you. I'm trying to get Todd to do a benefit show for you. And I gotta tell you, just listen real close. From the bottom of my heart, I'm sorry. You're Mr. Hardcore. You taught me how to be tough. And everything I do, Sandman, every time I wrestle for you. Every time I wrestle for the Sandman.
Dell, let's look at this Dreamer Sandman match. So I've kind of asked you to do a pay-per-view style match report. So yeah, go ahead. They got their I Quit match, which aired, I think, it was the first episode of the month. I can't remember.
Yeah, week one. Obviously, it's something ECW are not doing, at least at the moment, at least the pay-per-view format, but it is something that we did think merited the run-through. So just take a couple of minutes to run through this, just to give anybody that missed it a chance to kind of see what had happened. Starting the match, Sandman entered with a Singapore cane, harking back to last month. Not to be outdone, Dreamer brings a side panel that he seems to have stripped off a car. Starts quite on the outside with a brawl. Dreamer gets the upper hand with battering Sandman with a metal panel, but does get a low blow in return. Sandman gets his face raked before Dreamer clears the crowd away from the barrier. Tommy then hits a nice spinning heel kick to the Sandman as he's laid out. Dreamer then calls for a fan to hold up their own chair before ramming the Sandman headfirst into it, much to the crowd's approval. Sandman fights back, couple of clubbing elbows before suplexing Dreamer onto the concrete, into the ring for a chicken wing submission attempt by the Sandman, then hits Dreamer with a vertical suplex. And back to the outside, even more bizarrely than the chair spot for earlier, another fan then passes Dreamer a frying pan before he levels Sandman with it and tries to choke him out with a handle. Still no submission, Sandman returns to the top rope and hits a couple of flying elbows that even rival WWF's Jeff Jarrett at King of the Ring in June.
I think you're being very generous with the use of the word
I think so.
Flying.
We've had words about this, Bob, and it's pretty much a belly flop for the top rope. He's not renowned for his wrestling now, but he's certainly not done himself any favours with his attempt at flying elbows. But he does try a frog splash, misses that. Dreamer gets up, hits the DDT. Another submission attempt with a fish hook before Sandman hits him with a lovely long-standing pile driver. Dreamer's laid out, Sandman ominously lights a cigarette and then hits him with another pile driver, looks to have the match won. But as the referee checks Dreamer with a mic, after refusing to say I quit, Sandman gets in Dreamer's face. Tommy then throws the referee's hand with a mic away from his mouth into the Sandman, and in the act, Sandman's lit cigarette is forced into his face, burning his eye. Chaos then pretty much ensues. Woman rushes the ring, still with a cane in hand. Company officials are out, Todd Gordon comes out, Dreamer's calling urgently for the medics as the locker room fills the ring. Sandman's rushed out as quick as possible. We then cut to backstage, woman's verbally beaten down on Dreamer. The cameras try to get a look at the Sandman, emotions obviously running high. Officials then force the cameras out of the arena as we cut back to Joey Styles at the hospital.
That will end that. I mean, as an I Quit match, this wasn't a ton to write home about. I mean, alright, there's the issue of the fan bringing an actual frying pan.
Actually bringing weapons for the use of the superstarship.
But I'm trying to work out the logic before the show, what the fan went through to think. Cause either one, he went into his own kitchen, picked up a frying pan and thought, I don't want eggs tomorrow, I'm going to take this with me. Or two, he went somewhere else, bought a frying pan for the sole purpose of it being used in the match. Either way, he's a frying pan down. But I thought the use of weapons was very good. I mean, it was a slow brawl. I think you might as call it sluggish. I mean, I guess the match format makes sense in that regard. It wasn't a blowaway success in terms of a match. I mean, there was a lovely bit where kind of Sandman gets Dreamer into a pile driver position, like Dreamer's legs kind of fan out, and then Sandman just kind of pivots 90 degrees and kind of shows into kind of all four sides of the arena, which I thought was quite good. But really, the match itself isn't all that important. It's what happens well at the very end of the match and after it. And slightly critical in the sense that it's difficult to see on the hard camera exactly what happens, given that Dreamer's kind of, well, Sandman's got his back turned when Dreamer puts the cigarette in the aisle. I guess that probably helps in that we can't exactly see how
you kind of cut
this
it to batch,
And also with the shot from the Singapore cane as well. But a very effective angle. I thought Joey Styles said it very well on commentary, and the crowd gasped in a way that they perhaps may not have done if it hadn't have looked so convincing. So I think we've got to give both guys credit for really kind of obviously doing something right with that kind of little 15, 15-second segment in that the crowd really sold it like it was a massive incident.
Exactly. Which
it was playing out to be. And then we get all the stuff kind of post-match, with the kind of waiting outside and Sandman's on a gurney and there's like Todd Gordon's out there and Woman's out there. There's like a big part of the ECW roster and it's not face and heel. You know, you've got the Public Enemy who are kind of in there keeping him at bay and then there's Woman who's getting all angry and Dreamer's all remorseful. Incredibly effective segment, I thought.
And when you look at what we've seen with these two, even just compared to last month, Bob, for that crowd in Philly to have that kind of reaction and that gasp, you've got to be doing something right. And as you say, the two of them played it perfectly. I mean, looking back to the fan involvement as well, I mean, with the chair spot with the Sandman and the frying pan, it's just another example of seeing the buy-in that this crowd has got for this product. And as you say, hopefully in the next couple of months and years, we can just see this rolled out to a bigger and bigger audience. But it was really just, it was another one of these moments that we keep seeming to have month on month in ECW. With Sandman's wrestling abilities, as we say, it's never going to be a five-star classic, but by God, they can deliver occasions.
Del, let's move on really with the rest of the TV report for the month.
Yeah, just couple of different bits from October, moving on for Sandman and Dreamer. The Public Enemy have found a renewed figure this month, a vignette, which we've heard a bit of earlier, aired with Rocco and Grunge mapping their rise for the streets to tag team champions. As the two make their claim to recapture the titles for Cactus Jack and Mikey Whipwreck, they were shown throughout the month armed with baseball bats annihilating opponents. Another feud that's gathered momentum this month is Too Cold Scorpio and Born Again. Met this month and it was a pretty unsettling outcome to their match. They had a match middle in a month that ended in a DQ, but it saw Mr. Hughes align himself with Bourne after the match. Bourne would then put his doink mask on Scorpio and say, "Welcome to my hell." After Too Cold's promo in response the next week, the pair will now meet at November to Remember. And combined with the building rivalry between the Tasmaniac and the Shooter, Dean Malenko, these are two of the announced matches for November to Remember at this time of recording. And in the last show of the month, Shane Douglas opened by gloating about Ric Flair's recent WCW loss, saying the has-been is dead. Paulie Dangerously cut a good long promo with clips facing Sabu against Cactus Jack and Chris Benoit. And Jason did a living room, their living room promo and in the Palace of Sin, as he called it, as he sang "You Are So Beautiful" to his TV title belt. Definitely a moment worth watching if you have missed it.
Best moment of the month.
You're a great fan, but I mean, I think it's something we could maybe do at the end of the segment is maybe you recreating that for anybody that was unfortunate enough to miss that. If you want,
I'm going to pass on that one. Thank you, Del.
Maybe next month.
Maybe
have it in the end of the year highlight reel. We can have it the end of year awards.
The blooper reel.
Last thing for ECW this month, TV wise, main event the 25th of October saw Chris Benoit and the Tasmaniac fight to a 10-minute time limit draw. And that pretty much brings us to the end of the TV review, Bob.
This month of TV, I can barely pick fault with. You compare this to WCW Saturday Night, which I watch on a weekly basis, which is 2 hours, and of which there's 8 or 9 squash matches, some good to average promos, and one main event that invariably ends up in a DQ. And Raw with an hour each week, one good match, some squash matches with some characters that aren't all that over, and some questionable segments. This is immense. I mean,
we seem to say it every month, Bob. You look back to August, there was a false situation with the title tournament, the NWA debacle, the name change for Eastern to Extreme. September, we've got the follow up with that with some as good a debuts as you're going to see with the likes of Benoit, Malenko, Matt Bourne. And then this month, we've just seen it all come together. You've got Sandman and Dreamer, who, look at what we reviewed last month, they've even followed up on that, and then some this month. We've got the continuing, after the debuts last month, the continued rise of the young guys coming through, and as we've touched upon briefly a couple of times in the reviews that we've done, we're leading to a show in November to Remember, and it certainly looks as if it should be. So, I mean, every month we seem to be bitten this, getting a better quality at this product, and it's never been so good for these guys.
What did you think of Tommy Cairo and that kind of promo segment with Dreamer? Because obviously Sandman hasn't been seen since, and according to, as we said in the news, according to storyline at least, on November the 5th, he will announce his retirement. In the weeks that followed, they had a satellite interview with Tommy Cairo, and Cairo was the guy who feuded with Sandman in what you might call the original Singapore Kane feud.
Yeah.
Back in kind of April, May time. Cairo hasn't been seen for a while. I kind of forgotten about him. But he's now very much playing a heel role, which I think is better for him. He's a bit of a lame duck as a babyface.
It suits him, and it's really nice to see the kind of continuing evolution of Tommy Dreamer in that role as well, Bob. When you're looking back at when Cairo was there, again, for anybody that missed it, it was basically a satellite link up with Joey Styles backstage. Tommy Cairo was just blasting the Sandman. He had no remorse for it. He was playing the bad guy pretty much to a T, and it's really set a fire underneath, pardon the pun, excuse me, it's really set a fire under Tommy Dreamer with the kind of rebuttal to that. He is now fighting for the Sandman. He is coming across as a really genuine young guy, and he's really feeling bad about this Sandman situation, and it could be the perfect matchup with him and Tommy Cairo. As you say, it's how many months now? At least 2 or 3 months, I think, since we've seen Cairo. So getting him back, we know what he can do. Matching him up with Dreamer, it's a promising rivalry.
We'll say an interesting line in the midst of the Tommy Cairo promo where he said, quote, I've been eating peaches, which is a well-veiled reference to Miss Peaches. I think, are we going to see Sandman back as a face? Is that where we're going?
Because what we've seen built up in the month,
there was
Bobber.
An amazing clip at the start, I think, of the 18th show.
Yeah.
We can't really play it because it was just a vignette with kind of some classical music in the background.
It was just an orchestral video of Sandman and kind of what happened. And it's kind of building him up as like a superhero. I think it's going to be really interesting what we see at the November to Remember, how this is going to play out. Because if you look back before the match, you're seeing this big bad guy, cigarette hanging out the mouth, beating Tommy Dreamer with his Singapore cane last month. And what a difference one show can make after that match with Dreamer, and obviously the unfortunate outcome of that. The vignettes that aired, I mean, they even opened up, as I said briefly in the news, the 900 line to leave well wishes for the Sandman. It's really a miraculous turn of events in the last few weeks.
And then, highlight of the month, Jason in his living room, the Palace of Sin. It's just him cutting like a mysterious promo, and then we cut away and we come back and he's just there and he's just singing "You Are So Beautiful" to his TV title. But seek out the 25th edition of this show just for that. I mean, there's a really good main event in that show. There's a really good Poorly Dangerously promo, which is kind of underscored by some clips of Cactus Jack and Benoit's respective match with Sabu from the earlier taping in the month. But Jason was the peak. I mean, the whole month, I can barely find a foot wrong. When the Born Too Cold Scorpio feud was good, Too Cold Scorpio cut a good promo. Born's quite compelling as a character. The Public Enemy, as we heard earlier, are doing some really good work. A great month of TV. I can barely fault it. The match quality's been good, and we can't always say that about ECW, and that's not really a fault in many ways. But just a really good month of TV, and they're on a roll. And as you say, when you compare it, when you compare it to WWF and WCW, this isn't even close at the moment. This isn't even like, this is beyond, they've not got the production value. So I don't care. Like, this is miles better.
Doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't. It really, and the other thing I'll say, and we said this after the NWA title tournament, Terry Funk has not been missed. And that is not a slight on Terry Funk, because Terry Funk had a great month this month in WCW. Probably my favourite parts of that pay-per-view. But Funk has been gone for 2 months and he has not been missed.
You mentioned that there, Bob, and I actually forgot. That's, as they say, no slight at all on Funk. Man can still go, man can still draw a crowd. But this month is, as you said, 2 months, I think, now since we've seen him for that night with Shane Douglas in the title. 2 months now, and you wouldn't even recognise that he's not there. I mean, there's literally something for everybody in this month of TV. You've got quality matches with young guys coming through. You've got the main events. You've got the extreme stuff. You've got promos with Paulie Dangerously. You've got comedy with Jason. What more can you look for?
Thoughts on the shooter? I don't think we mentioned it in the theory report, the shooter and the Tasmanian bit. I mean, that really played out on the first episode of the month, and they had a match which kind of broke down. And then we ended up with this great moment with the Tasmanian getting quite angry at the PWI cameraman. and it turns out that the PWI cameraman can run bloody fast.
He can get around that ring like a whippet, Bob.
And Tasmaniac followed him, but Christ. But yeah, you know, I like what they're doing with the shooter character. I think that's been quite strong. Benoit's been really good. Again, I just barely put a few on. Mrs. Hughes is back. And we'll see where that goes, I suppose. That alignment with Bourne again probably makes sense, given that you know, Bourne aligned himself with Shane Douglas. And Mr. Hughes has been with Shane Douglas for a while. But yeah, roll on November, really.
If it keeps going the way it's going every month, as we've said before, we'll probably say it again, this is the promotion to keep an eye on.
Completely. As seek out that 25th of October show. I mean, seek them all out, but that one in particular, I love that. And that will wrap up this month's ECW show. We will be back the other side of this Shane Douglas promo, and I'll be looking at the WWF.
I stand here today as the man that wears the gold, the man who challenged the Nature Boy to a shoot, and the Nature Boy refused to take it. I challenged him to come up to Philadelphia with me in the Spectrum and see if he can go 60 minutes with the franchise. And he hasn't taken it. In fact, he gave an unequivocal, no, sir, I won't do it. You can't trust the franchise. What are you afraid of, Rick? Are you afraid of getting your ass kicked? Are you afraid of taking somebody that you claimed was always mid-card, mid-level, and take you down and prove to everybody in the wrestling world that you're nothing more than garbage, that you're nothing more than second rate, that you are nothing more than an old man looking for a handout, a paycheck from Ted Turner? But enough said about has-beens. ECW is where the future of professional wrestling lies. It's not with WCW. It's not with WWF. It's with Extreme Championship Wrestling. Because this sport is violent. Because people get broken bones. Because people break their necks. Because people get sprains and contusions every single night in this sport. Tell the little kids at home to sit down and watch Snoopy on Saturday morning, because professional wrestling is a violent sport. And I stand at the top of the mountain today looking down at all the throngs of great wrestlers in ECW. You can talk about giants. You can talk about the near 7 foot tall, 350-pound 911. Or you can talk about crazy maniacs, death-defying flyers like Sabu. Or you can talk about great wrestling technicians like the shooter Dean Malenko. Or you can talk about the great Benoit. You can talk about the incredible suplex machine, Tasmaniac. You can talk about the young up-and-coming great athletes like Tommy Dreamer. You can talk about Too Cold Scorpio, the man that flies like nobody else in this sport. And when you take them and you lump them all together, what you've got assembled is the greatest set of wrestlers, the greatest group of wrestlers ever assembled in the United States or in the world. That's the reason that the letters ECW mean wrestling, and wrestling means ECW. The others are nothing more than pretenders to the throne. They can talk about being wrestling, but then they say no violence. They can talk about being great, but then they don't answer the call for the franchise. They can talk about the big bucks that Ted Turner or Vince McMahon have. But all across this great nation, people are talking about one wrestling organization, the Extreme Championship Wrestling Federation. And I am at top of the mountain as the franchise, as the greatest wrestler slash athlete. You notice I didn't put the word entertainer in there. As the man that has taken the sport of professional wrestling to a new level. I can stand here and explain to the people
why it is they call me the franchise. But rather than say it, just turn on your TV every week and watch it, because a picture's worth a thousand words.
We move on to the WWF, and we will start with the TV review. October the 3rd, the British Bulldog back in action against Jim the Anvil Neidhart with Owen Hart. Owen gets involved, pulling down the top rope, forcing Bulldog's foot to the outside. You will notice from earlier on, no DQ. Out comes Bret Hart, and even up the numbers. Backlund comes out to confront Bret Hart, and distraction allows Owen to get involved and end the match with a DQ. WWF had a brief video clip mocking the baseball strike with Macho Man Randy Savage playing baseball with a young fan. The video had the tagline, World Wrestling Federation, our season never ends. The King's Court with Yokozuna, Jim Cornette and Mr. Fuji. This was basically playing not the same gimmick from before the Royal Rumble, Yokozuna being afraid of the word casket. Moving on to October the 10th, Lex Luger versus Bam Bam Bigelow with Ted DiBiase, Tatanka and Nikolai Volkov. King Kong Bundy walks out mid-match and seems to join the heel faction. Adam Bomb and Mabel come out to level up the numbers somewhat. This match is setting up for a Survivor Series tag match. Luger win by roll-up and the heels argue on the outside. We get Jerry Lawler feuding with Dink and Doink. And Lawler introduces his own midget wrestler called Queasy, dressed in Lawler regalia. Moving on to October the 17th, Jeff Jarrett versus Doink with Dink and new midget called Wink. Yes.
See where you're going with that, Bob.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, that Shane Douglas promo you heard about 3 minutes ago, like, this is it. Anyway. Queasy and another midget come out in Lawler gear. Usual shenanigans. The match ends with the referee being distracted by the midgets on the outside. Lawler runs in, drops the elbow on Doink, who had the match won, and Jarrett wins the match. Lawler introduces us to his latest midget called Sleazy. We cut to a clip of Superstars with Bob Backlund confronting his former manager Arnold Scarland. Backlund puts Scarland in the chicken wing submission. On Raw, Backlund apologises for shooting Scarland as his manager all those years ago, says he'll retire if anyone can get out of the chicken wing, and even challenges any member of the crowd. Out comes Lex Luger.
Maybe you'd like to have a word here, Lex Luger?
Definitely. You know, I've seen and heard just about enough about you in the cross-faced chicken wing, Mr. Backlund. First, you put the cross-faced chicken wing on a magazine writer from the WWF. What a proud moment, Mr. Backlund. And then you follow that up by putting your longtime friend and manager, Arnold Scarland, in the cross-faced chicken wing. Now, I've got just one thing to say to you, Bobby Backlund. How about a wrestler? Why don't for once you pick on somebody your own size?
Moving on to October the 24th, Razor Ramon defeats Yokozuna by countout to retain the WWF Intercontinental title. Your standard Yokozuna-type match ended when a casket was wheeled out to ringside by Druids. Yokozuna falls out to the ring, stumbles back into it, then gets scared and runs off. Yokozuna's run is amazing. October the 31st edition of Raw, Lex Luger versus Bob Backlund. Tatanka arrives midway through the match and watches on from by the entranceway. Tatanka will eventually get involved, distracting Luger so that Backlund can lock in the chicken wing submission, and Luger passes out. Backlund eventually releases the hold, but Tatanka beats down Luger. Backlund then locks it back in before Randy Savage runs into the ring and helps the referees fight Backlund off. King Kong Bundy wins a squash match with a 5 count, interestingly enough. IRS's latest gimmick is that he's going around gravestones claiming that the dead people haven't paid their taxes. Undertaker on King's Court. We get fewer jokes from the King as usual. Lawler quite rightly brings up the deja vu of Taker facing Yokozuna in a casket match at the Royal Rumble and briefly mocks Taker for losing, but less comedy here. Paul Bearer uses an edition of the WWF magazine to illustrate that people who face the Undertaker go away one by one.
There comes a time in everyone's life, where they must be held accountable for their actions. Yokozuna, your time has come. That most heinous crime that you committed when you had 10 of the top superstars of the World Wrestling Federation come down and aid you. Not only was it a crime against The Undertaker, but a crime against all of my creatures of the night. These same creatures that would not let me rest, the ones who brought me back to do justice. Yokozuna, the time has come for you to pay. And at the Survivor Series, Yokozuna, when the call goes out, you will know it is time for you to rest in peace.
Then the show ends with Lex Luger cutting a promo that was inaudible, apparently due to a technical issue. But the way it played out, it may well very well have been by design. They cut back to Randy Savage on commentary. Savage says, "I think we've got audio back now." And they cut back to Luger, who's then involved in a brawl with Tatanka. Del, let's talk about this Bret Hart story. Well, not really a story, really. It's just kind of a report, although sourced from more than one place. Bret Hart is apparently going to lose the WWF title very soon, or soon. I don't know specifically whether we're talking about Bob Backlund, but I suppose there's a very good chance they're going to face each other next month. I don't really get it. Backlund, I should say, the Backlunds, as much as I don't think Backlund's the guy, as much as I don't think this should be his spot, the Backlund stuff has been excellent. They've done He's such a really good job over the last couple of months in terms of Backlund locking in the chicken wing, not letting it go. The stuff last month with the WWF magazine writer and that shot of all the referees and Savage storming the ring, and then this month with Savage storming the ring again to break it up.
Yep.
That's been great. Backlund winning the title, Del, I can't really work out.
That's the worry. I mean, it's been really good to see him. I was never a great fan, if I'm honest, Bob. Whether it was because I was too young at the time to understand the technical abilities, or I was just never a great fan of Bob Backlund. And with what we've already reviewed with the WCW stuff and people coming in that don't really belong there, Backlund's certainly been a few cuts above that. The TV stuff that he's been doing, the persona that he's built up, the heat that he's got with the crowd, it has been good to see him. But if the reports are right about Brett losing the title, it makes you wonder. I mean, that's obviously been a lengthy reign from WrestleMania that Brett's had the title. He's been a really fighting champion, is put over in TV every week. Is it going to be, dare we say it, another lengthy reign for Bob Backlund? I don't really see, especially when they're billing the
last time,
you're talking about years in length. When they're building up to this new generation, is it a chance where they're maybe seeing Backlund as not the guy, but a guy to give Brett that lift up? Because, I mean, looking back at his reign, has Brett headlined a show with that belt?
Well, he headlined WrestleMania when he won it, but
it
should also be said that obviously that was him headlining a match that he wasn't advertised to headline. King of the Ring was headlined by Jerry Lawler and Roddy Piper. SummerSlam was headlined by The Undertaker versus The Undertaker. This show we don't know, but they are very much booking it as a co-main between this match and Undertaker and Yokozuna.
Given
that Chuck Norris is going to be involved in that match,
yeah,
that might go on last. I don't know what Brett's done wrong in that he's not a blowaway champion. I don't get the sense he's moving a ton of needles, but he's doing the best he can. You know, he's got certain limitations in the sense that he's not a great promo, but he is a very, very good performer, very good wrestler. He is, barring The Undertaker, the most over guy on the roster as a babyface, certainly. And he's a big title. I don't get who would look at Backlund, as much as Backlund's doing some very good work, and go, you know what, this is the better option.
Yep. I mean, I think what Brett seems to suffer from, certainly in my eyes, is I think he's too much of an opposite to what they had in Hulk Hogan, Bob. I think looking at how Hogan was, where he was never a technical expert, he was never a great worker in the ring, but by God, the man had and still has charisma. Brett's kind of the polar opposite. Brett is an amazing technical wrestler, whether it's submission style, whether it's brawling, whether it's just having stellar matches, as we've already seen a couple of times with his brother this year, amongst others. He's kind of the polar opposite to Hogan, and I think that might be what's working against him. I think WWF, from an entertainment standpoint, they just don't see Brett drawing eyes to the TV. I think they see him as somebody to put in the middle of the card, and he'll entertain the wrestling fans. And I think they just seem to be looking for something else. And it's really a shame, as you say. He's a brilliant worker. He really is one of the guys that could spearhead this new generation movement. And it looks, by certainly all reports that we're receiving, that it might be time up already.
Jerry Lawler, Sleazy, Queasy and Cheesy versus Doink, Dink, Wink and Pink. Explain.
We're going to see a match at this next pay-per-view, Bob, where we've got a man masquerading as possibly dead. We're seeing him fight a sumo wrestler, and we're going to have Chuck Norris on the outside as a special enforcer. That match does not seem strange in the slightest. That pretty much sums up the Jerry Lawler Doink et al. Match that we're going to see. It's just bizarre.
I've lost for words. Genuinely speechless. All I can say is that I cannot wait for this version of this match in ECW with Born Again and History Midgets and Two Cold Scorpio and History Midgets. that'll be something else. But I who knows? Are you looking forward to Survivor Series, Del? Process of a title change, Undertaker casket match. I mean, we've got Guts and Glory versus the Million Dollar Team. There's another big 5-man tag as well, which kind of rounds out the card. I should also say, actually, I'll come back to you down in a sec, but just quickly interrupt. I haven't seen the second match, but WWF started a new program this month called The Action Zone. Bret Hart and Owen Hart had a very good WWF title match on the first edition. And then apparently there is an extremely good match between Shawn Michaels and Diesel versus Razor Ramon and the 1-2-3 Kid. I haven't seen it yet, but very well worth going out your way to watch, so I'm told. People are rating that match 4+ stars.
So after these two matches, Bob, how are they going to headline it? How are they going to follow up on these two? What's next?
What's next? The third edition of the WWF Action Zone. The action of Mabel versus Yokozuna.
Yes. It's the match they've been waiting for, Bob.
That's right. They've been building up to that match with the undercard of Bret and Owen and then that tag match. My God. Are you looking forward to Survivor Series, Del?
I think that there's certainly elements about it. It's another one of these gimmick pay-per-views where it's got that niche to it. I mean, I've kind of said it before, I was a great fan of King of the Ring. You've got the tournament brackets, you've got the Rumble with the 30 men. I wonder if there's going to be disqualifications in that now with the over-the-top rope situation, but that's another story. It's they kind of do these gimmick pay-per-views well, and obviously you've got the elimination aspect to the Survivor Series where we can see kind of feuds peak at these with the guys involved. We can also see feuds starting at these as well with the multi-man setup. The match with Undertaker and Yokozuna, it was decent enough at the Royal Rumble. It could well be that we're kind of getting suggested we know who's going to win with Jerry Lawler in the King's Court, kind of mocking the Undertaker's loss in January. It could be that that's kind of on the cards, that we know where that's going, but it'll still be a decent enough match, I would think. The kind of chance to see the title change kind of worries me to an extent, but also intrigues me as well how they're going to go with that. Is it a case where we're getting wrong reports, or is it a case where we're maybe just not going to get it this time?
We have been Yeah, we had the thing with Luger before WrestleMania where they filmed the segment at a TV taping, I think at the end of February, with Luger coming out of the title belt for a show that was being shown after WrestleMania.
And then it changed. I mean, we know that things can change at the last minute, especially in the WWF as much as anywhere else. But, I mean, is it a case where it's maybe just not going to be this time, Brett's going to lose, but maybe Bob Backlund does just there to give him that lift to get him bumped up the card? It's certainly intriguing.
And the other thing as well, and we've got kind of a few weeks before this show airs, is that they haven't done a lot of Backlund and Hart interacting yet. And all right, they're gonna do it, but that's what this feud needs, is that at the moment it's kind of Bret Hart being, you know, good guy, babyface, Bob Backlund being, you know, kind of doing some really good heel work, but they're kind of separate entities at the moment.
But never the twain shall meet. Yeah, we need that in the next couple of weeks to build it up to something that's a bit of a spectacle,
And fucking Dink, Wink and Pink.
And sleazy, queasy, and wheezy. Yeah.
Cheesy, isn't it? I think, or whatever.
Easy, sleazy. It whatever. Certainly makes me feel queasy, whatever's happening.
There's that. Del, your match / moment of the month.
I think, again, we've got to hark back to ECW, Bob, and looking back at the full Sandman and Dreamer situation. We've spoke about it earlier on. We've spoke about it last month as well with the situation with the Singapore Kane. I think when you're looking at WCW and this Three Faces of Fear faction, when you're looking at WWF and we're kind of talking Dink and Pink and Stink and Link, and I think you've got to be looking at ECW at these months to be really looking at actually bringing something into the 90s, to quote Sting. That's where it is for me. So that's my moment of the month, and match of the month would be the situation with Sandman and Dreamer.
I'm voting with the Nasty Boys versus Terry Funk and Bunkhouse Buck.
You loved that, Bob, didn't you?
Any match that ends, I mean, alright, this has Law of Diminishing Returns, but from now on, any match I see that ends with a pile driver onto a pumpkin will get my Match of the Month award.
I hope we're going to have that rule set in stone, and it's not going to be one of these over the top rope situations where next month we have a match with an exploding pumpkin and it's bumped to second place.
Well, to be fair, I think you can save Lawler, Dink, Wink, Pink, Cheesy, Sleazy, Queasy and Doink if Lawler wins the match by pile driving a midget onto a pumpkin. That's the only way to save that match.
That is certainly an upping of that, ain't it, Bob?
Anyway, that'll do that. Anyway, Del Muir, thank you very much for joining me this evening.
Pleasure, Bob. Thanks again.
You're on Twitter.
Yep, Del_Muir, DEL_MUIR. Follow for up-to-date musings and flashbacks to the 20 years ago project as well.
Absolutely. We have a new website. It's not replaced wrestling20years.com because of things with RSS feeds, but since you've heard me last, I have built a new website called www.wrestling20yrs.com. That's basically the place to go now for all your back episodes. You can go to the old one if you want, but it's there. We're on Twitter at Wrestling20YRS. We're now on facebook.com/Wrestling20YRS. I'm also putting out a casting call. Del, I like how you use a guest, but we need to spread our wings far and wide.
That's sad. There's almost so much of me you can hear in a year.
That's true. There's only so much jock I can take as well in 1 month, in one show. But if you're in the UK and you listen to the project and the podcast and you think you might want to get involved, drop me a line via Twitter, and we can take it from there. Again, we are, you know, next month we're potentially covering three shows: Survivor Series, The Clash and the Triple A show. Del, I'm gonna put you in charge of the Triple A show. That could be a fun one.
You're going to hear a Scotsman try and pronounce Mexican names, so tune in next month
There's a reason why I didn't take this show on. So we'll have that, and so next month promises to be a big one. But anyway, that'll do that. I've been Bob Bamber. This has been the October 1994 edition of the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. And until next time, goodbye.